My guest David Paymer is one of the stars of the film Get Shorty. He plays a dry cleaner who cashes in on an insurance scam but remains a real loser. Paymer won an Academy Award nomination for his role in Billy Crystal's movie Mr. Saturday Night. He worked with Crystal in City Slickers and its sequel. You can also see Paymer in the film Quiz Show, which is now out on video. Quiz Show is about one of the biggest scandals in TV history, the revelation in 1958 that the game show 21 was rigged. Contestants were sometimes provided with the questions before airtime. David Paymer played the producer of the Quiz Show. I spoke with him when Quiz Show was released in October of last year. Here's a scene from the movie in which Paymer, as producer Dan Enright, tells contestant Herb Stemple, played by John Turturro, that it's time for him to throw the game.
You lose when I tell you to lose.
Why now?
It's an arrangement. It's always been an arrangement.
If you told me to lose before, if you told me to lose right from the beginning, that I'd understand. That'd be the story of my life. But why now? What did I do?
Look at the big picture. It's not like television is going to go away, you know? I mean, think about the future.
You mean like a panel show?
Yeah, check.
Now, the last category is movies.
We're going to ask you what won the Academy Award for Best Picture in 1955. You don't know it? You answer on the waterfront.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Don't do that. Not Marty. I saw Marty 3 times. The best picture from 2 years ago, and I don't know it?
Someone of your intellect, and it's such a simple question. Don't you see the drama of that?
Drama?
Herb, don't do this to yourself.
Please, let me lose on a physics question. Not Marty, Dan. Don't do this to me. It's too humiliating.
For 70 grand, Herb, you can afford to be humiliated.
Although game show producer Dan Enright sounds like the villain of the story, actor David Paymer told me he didn't play it that way.
You know, Dan Enright, what he was really concerned about was ratings and putting on a dramatic show. And I even watched interviews with him in his later years, and all he would talk about was drama. We wanted drama. And he was really following a long tradition of rigging, or the euphemism, I suppose, was controlling these quiz shows that dated back to the 40s in radio. And, you know, Dan Enright was trying to create a dramatic show, and in a way he thought that he was educating the country. And I sort of took that tack as an actor, that my character felt he was doing a good thing for the country, that he was sort of opening up education and knowledge and intellect for the school children of America. So I played him as a college dean, mm-hmm. not as the bad guy.
Did you ever watch any of the game shows that Dan Enright produced?
Yeah, Robert Redford gave us these kinescopes of the original shows of 21, a lot of the shows that are depicted in the film. And it's quite fascinating to watch these contestants in retrospect. Some of them were very good actors, actually. But then again, some of them, when you watch it now, it's almost laughable. And you wondered, you know, why didn't the American public realize they were being duped? Because they'd ask questions like, what was the name of Paul Revere's horse? And then these contestants would be like, let me think. I mean, a question like that, usually either you know it or you don't. And they're taking all this time and really being dramatic, like Enright told them to. And some of it looks quite fake.
Of course, so much on TV from that period looks fake to us now.
Well, that's true, I guess. And I suppose, it's a testament to the power of the medium, of that very new medium at the time, that when people saw it coming over the airwaves, they just believed it, you know?
Though I have to say, you know, like Wheel of Fortune isn't exactly verite. You know, I mean, quiz shows have never looked exactly real.
Right. But I guess it's really the line that Scorsese says in the movie when he says, Scorsese, playing one of the sponsors, says, well, the quiz shows will be back. They're just going to have to ask easier questions because the American people... really, they don't care about the questions or the answers. They're just following the money. And, Jeopardy's sometimes difficult, though, isn't it?
Yeah, right. It is.
At least if you play Double Jeopardy.
No, what did you do to get the look of the era?
And what a look. Talk about unflattering.
Didn't like those glasses?
Someone said to me after seeing me, gee, Dave, you have absolutely no ego at all. It's so great. I mean, you know, what does that mean? Well, I know what it means. Well, you know, Dan Enright didn't have the greatest hairstyle in the world. And actually, Redford suggested a hairpiece for me, which is really not flattering at all, because it's sort of that bacon strips, you know, combed, you know, brought over from the side, and it looks terrible. And then these dark glasses, sort of like the Steve Allen glasses of the 50s, but really thick, which is what Enright wore back then, too. So I was looking at a lot of pictures of Enright, and, you know, it's not really my... not really my choice of a way to look, but I think it worked for the role.
What was it like to work with Robert Redford as your director? Do you think he has any insights by virtue of having worked as an actor for so many years?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Redford is absolutely an actor's director. And by that I mean he knows how to speak with actors. He knows how to talk with them. He knows how to communicate what it is he needs in a scene. I like to say that Redford knows the actor's secret handshake. He can just say a word or two and make you understand what he's talking about.
What's one of those words he said to you that helped?
Well, for me it was economy. I'm sort of I can be sort of like a nervous guy, a little neurotic, a deal of anxiety here sometimes. And when I started rehearsing Enright, I was sort of moving my hands a lot while I was talking and trying to convince Van Doren, for instance, to go on the show, or the rigged show. And Redford said to me, you know, there's an authority thing, Dave, and it's just economy. It's just not moving around so much in your seat, not using the hands so much. And if you watch my performance, there's a stillness to it that is very different from a lot of the other roles I've played.
Mm-hmm.
And in that stillness comes authority, and it really worked for me. I mean, it's amazing. It's hard to just sit still because you've got all this nervous energy as an actor, but Redford showed me a way to kind of rein that in, and it worked very well for the character.
Actor David Paymer is my guest. The character you played on Mr. Saturday Night, it seems like the opposite side of the coin from the character that you play in Quiz Show. You look similar in terms of like the eyeglasses and everything in both roles. It's the same period. But in Mr. Saturday Night, you're always getting taken advantage of. And in Quiz Show, you're the one taking advantage of others.
Right. Isn't that beautiful?
You know, what goes around comes around.
Yeah, I love when that happens. that's one of the reasons that I was so attracted to the role of Dan Enright, because it was so different. And I think after Mr. Saturday Night, maybe people were thinking, gee, that, you know, that David Paymer, he's such a mensch, you know, he's such a nice guy, you know. And I have read for some, quote, bad guys in the past 2 years, and I haven't got the parts. So I hope that people are seeing the dark side of David Paymer. You know, maybe this will open up a new range for me.
You've told us a little bit about how you carried yourself, that whole economy of motion, in a power role. In Mr. Saturday Night, when you're somebody who's being taken advantage of by your brother, how do you carry yourself differently? How do you use your voice differently?
Well, a lot of Mr. Saturday Night was listening, because I mean, I learned early on when Billy and I were doing some improvs and stuff in rehearsal that it's pretty hard to top Billy when you're improvising, you know. And I felt a little inadequate in trying to come up with jokes that were as funny as Billy's. And I said that to Billy early on, and he said to me, "That's perfect." And I said, "Why?" He said, "That's how Stan feels. You know, Stan always wants to be as funny as Buddy, and he wants to be in front of the audience, but he doesn't quite have it." So I used that reality in terms of how I felt, not being a stand-up comic, trying to sort of, you know, verbally spar with Billy. And also, I don't know. I just had a, there was a lot of emotional stuff from my, my childhood and from my own relationship with my brother that I used in Mr. Saturday Night as well.
Well, you and your brother used to do a comedy act together.
Yes, we did.
What kind of act was it?
Not very good.
What else was it like?
Well, it was actually when we first moved to L.A. I'm very close with my brother, Steve. He's a comedy writer. And we used to, he played at Merv Griffin, and I would be Sylvester Stallone, and I would be Nicholson, and we'd do all these impressions. And, you know, we soon found that it wasn't really for us. I mean, being a comedian is kind of like being a salesman, and I don't think I would be a very good salesman, you know, talking people into buying things that they don't really want. I'm not very good at that. And a comedian is like, well, you know, I got these jokes. Do you want to buy them? Do you like them? You don't like them. You're not buying. And it felt like that a lot. So I sort of stuck with acting, and my brother went into writing. I've done some writing as well, but more recently it's been mostly acting for me.
Is your father in show business?
Well, he is, actually. He's a musician, and he's also has a doctor of musicology. He went back to school later in life, and but he's a very talented pianist and a composer. And you know, when my brother and I were kids, my parents used to put on shows that they wrote and directed and produced on Long Island, community shows. And I'm from Oceanside, Long Island, and my folks wrote a show called Oceanside USA, and they did it to raise money for the public library and stuff like that. And I can remember when I was 5 or 6 years old sitting in the front row and seeing my dad, like, conducting this little orchestra he put together, and my mom on stage acting. And so, gee, I guess it was in the blood, you know.
You started off in musicals, didn't you, as an actor? I know you were in Grease. I know that was one of your early big breaks.
Yeah, that was really my first break, the show Grease. And I did, you know, I did all the musical comedies back in high school. That was the big thing. I suppose it still is in most high schools.
So did you like Grease?
It was a great experience. It's, you know, it's a fun show, and I was 21 years old, mm-hmm. and I was just out of college, and I walked into an open call, and I got the part, and I did the national touring company, and then they sent me to Broadway within a year, and it was like, it was a dream come true. I mean, that, to this day, that's the most important job I ever got in show business, because I wasn't the type of person or actor who would have stuck it out for like 10 years or 12 years waiting tables. I don't think I had the constitution for that. And I was very lucky to have a measure of success at such a young age.
We know between Grease, Mr. Saturday Night, and Quiz Show, a lot of your roles have been in the 1950s.
I know. It's weird. I mean, I was reading some of the notices on Quiz Show, and one of them said, you know, and David Paymer, who has, you know, this quintessential 1950s face.
No, what does that mean?
I have no idea. You know, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm glad because it's worked out.
Have you gone back and looked at family photos from the 50s to see what your family looked like back in the period that you've been playing?
Well, yeah, and I mean, especially my dad, because he, you know, just the hair and that whole look, it just, I don't know, it seems like almost artificial now, but it's, you know, that's the way people were. Also, for Enright, there was sort of a, actually it gained a little weight for Enright, because there was sort of a softness to these guys. You know, these guys weren't working out, they were smoking and drinking, and I don't think they took very good care of themselves. And you can look back at the 50s, and these guys who were relatively young really look kind of puffy. So I was going for that at the time.
I have in my mind cast you in two different roles in movie biographies. One is a biopic of George C. Scott, The Early Years.
Thank you.
And the other is George Mitchell, The Early Years. I don't know why.
Can I play him when he's baseball commissioner?
Right. But this is in your 1950s guys with those glasses.
Yeah, right.
Right? I mean, not you as yourself. Actually, I've never seen you as yourself.
That's
in New York and I'm in Philadelphia, so I have no idea what you look like out of character.
I look much better than I do on... I'm telling you, I have no ego whatsoever in my film roles. And I don't wear glasses. This is what's killing me.
Not at all? Not even contact lenses?
Killing me. No, I don't wear glasses. And yet, in many of my screen roles, I wear glasses. I don't know. I'm going to have to stop doing that.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk with you. I thank you a lot.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
David Paymer recorded in October of 1994. You can see him in the new film Get Shorty and in Quisha, which is now out on video. This is Fresh Air.